I have strong feelings about Atlanta because it's home. I grew up here, my wife Andrea grew up here, and now my daughter is growing up here. I really care about what happens in government, business, the arts. I want to know about it, understand it, and I want to help you understand it too. That's why my job is reporting, and I can't think of any other place I'd rather be doing it.
Action News 2 with John Pruitt and Monica Kaufman, first in Atlanta.
Welcome to Artworker. I'm Abby Miller. In this series, we're going back to the 1970s to look at how the local art scene was built in Atlanta, Georgia, and we're recontextualizing artists as members of the working class. Last week, we learned about the Neighborhood Arts Center, a group of public art workers who served their community by providing free, high-quality programming and access to art. Today, we're going to look at an artist collective who used public funding and support towards a different end. In the mid-1970s, Atlanta Mayor Maynard Jackson worked with the newly formed Ad Hoc Committee for the Arts and the Bureau of Cultural and International Affairs to direct resources directly to unemployed artists, of which there were many in Atlanta. While the Neighborhood Arts Center was on the front lines of employing art workers with government funds made available through the Comprehensive Employment and Training Act, it wasn't long before other artists followed their example. CETA funds were intended to alleviate widespread unemployment across the United States in response to the 1973 recession, and working-class artists in Atlanta were heavily impacted by unemployment. These artists saw the opportunities before them. The money that was suddenly on the table, so to speak, for artists was formally transferred to them through nonprofit arts organizations that they created. Atlanta Mayor Maynard Jackson was happy to do this, to build up the cultural life of the city, because it supported his vision of making Atlanta an international destination for business, leisure, and tourism. Under Jackson's leadership, the city government worked hard to rebrand Atlanta through optimistic marketing and strategic business partnerships.
Atlanta is the capital of the Southeast of the United States.
I'm a fisherman. My wife likes to shop. We find it all right here in Atlanta.
But the arts not only create beauty, they create jobs. Businesses prefer to locate in communities with a rich cultural life.
We've moved our corporate headquarters to Atlanta, and we really like it.
I love it. I think it's a clean city. There's a lot of entertainment. It's a very liberal city, and there are a lot of good-looking men.
Tourism campaigns that painted the city as a thriving hub of economic prosperity and entertainment reflected a partially accurate, if not aspirational, vision of the city. Jackson did a great deal to benefit business and transportation. He tried to address housing issues and crime, but many Atlantans continued to suffer and to live in poverty. Of concern to us here, artists in Atlanta were wanting for much before Mayor Jackson was elected. Opportunities and spaces for artists to show their work were lacking. Housing insecurity was a common concern, as was access to affordable health care. However, art workers were not content to sit back and wait for a solution.
I guess it was kind of the beginnings of what's going on now in terms of a lot of community arts programs and the kind of neo-Marxist approach to doing community arts programs. But there was a great deal of interest in taking charge of your own life as an artist, in taking charge of your own economic life as an artist. This was when the feminist...
In the mid-1970s, artists Tommy Mew and Ken Friedman teamed up with Atlanta gallery owner David Heath and the librarian-slash-visual artist Julia Fenton to create a bi-monthly publication dedicated to giving exposure to regional artists and art scenes. The aptly titled Contemporary Arts Southeast was the first publication of its kind in the American South. Fenton, who was the initial editor of Contemporary Art Southeast, opened the 1977 inaugural issue with an article advocating for an open dialogue, loose talk, as she put it, between readers and writers, so that matters pertaining to the art and to the Southeast could be opened up and fully explored. And the editors jumped right in, covering a range of topics that are still highly relevant to cultural workers, such as the unique ways that artists experience alienation and the contradictions between gallery representation being both a requirement for success and a barrier to it. The August-September 1977 issue of Contemporary Art Southeast contained a supplement called Artlanta, which I read from in the first episode of this series. It was the first in a series of supplements that were each dedicated to the art community of a different southern city. The Artlanta issue was insightful, calling attention to the historically antagonistic relationship between politics and art in the United States, and the accumulation of wealth into the hands of a minority elite upper class. However, the opening article also pointed out that public sentiment seemed to move with the cultural shifts of the 1960s, causing many people to see artists as workers, quote, perhaps even as positive assets in a healthy, diversified society, unquote. The editors credited Atlanta for the distinct conditions that made it so hospitable to artists. The Artlanta Supplement of Contemporary Art Southeast was a love letter to Atlanta, to art, and to the moment that produced it. While the issues of the day were not ignored, they weren't dwelled on either. There was too much excitement being generated by the various art workers and their community organizations to lose sight of the potential to create something meaningful. The energy and concerns of the mid-1970s Atlanta art scene merged in the formation of the Atlanta Art Workers Coalition, also known as AAWC. Formed in 1976 by a small group of artists, including painter Santo Bruno and sculptor George Beasley, as a nonprofit organization of visual artists, the AAWC was dedicated to operating as a unified voice for its members. The group's central goals were to increase the quality of and access to art in Atlanta and to improve the socioeconomic status of artists in the city. As a coalition of art workers in the Southeast, AAWC cared about opportunities for artists across the region, and they exhibited work by members and non-members across the Southeast at the collective's gallery. As advocates for AAWC members, group leadership attempted to raise public awareness about the material or socioeconomic concerns that art workers faced. The coalition's programs and activities included maintaining a library, compiling and sharing employment opportunities and services, building and maintaining a directory of Atlanta area artists, and keeping an up-to-date list of available housing and studio space as a resource to members. In 1977, Julia Fenton left Contemporary Art Southeast to join AAWC as Director of Activities, a position funded with a grant from the NEA. Fenton also served as editor of the Coalition newspaper, which reached a circulation of about 1,300 by 1977. Fenton was the liaison between the Atlanta Art Workers Coalition, the public, other arts organizations, and government agencies. That same year, artist Dan Talley was hired as an AAWC curator, a position funded through CETA. Talley had a background in painting and photography and had co-founded a gallery in Connecticut before returning to his home state of Georgia in 1976 to work as assistant editor of Contemporary Art Southeast. Fenton and Talley took their experience as arts administrators and as editors of Contemporary Art Southeast with them to the Atlanta Art Workers Coalition in 1977 and got to work in the coalition's new office space at 972 Peachtree Street. One of the first things the coalition did after their formation in late 1976 was create a newsletter that would be distributed to members. The AAWC newsletter began circulation in February 1977, and the first few issues were essentially one-page flyers containing information about studio space and exhibition opportunities. The AAWC identified a problem that they attempted to solve through the newsletter. There was no centralized location or source where working-class Atlanta artists could go to receive information and resources relevant to their needs and their skill sets. While Contemporary Art Southeast did include some classified-style postings of this sort, the regional distribution of that publication meant that only a portion of those listings were relevant to Atlanta art workers.
At that point, a couple of people, George Beasley and Santo Bruno, were starting the Art Workers Coalition, which was the closest thing to a union that Atlanta had. And these organizations were popping up all over the country too. And I was asked to be the executive director there, their first paid position. So I decided to do that. And when I went there, started a newspaper that was kind of a continuation of Contemporary Art Southeast.
A central location for the AAWC to operate out of was crucial for enabling the coalition to do their work of housing members' work portfolios, maintaining a library, holding member meetings, and creating the newsletter. The Atlanta Art Worker Coalition members renovated the space themselves, putting their skills as art workers to use by remodeling a neglected second-story space in a building on Peachtree Street into a 5-room workspace and gallery. As soon as the space was ready to be occupied, the coalition applied for CETA funds to hire a secretary, Elizabeth Randolph. The small team who handled the day-to-day of AAWC split their time between their own art practices and creating programming and workshops for other artists and for the public. A crucial distinction between community center groups like the Neighborhood Arts Center and the Atlanta Art Workers Coalition is that the AAWC was primarily focused on supporting artists and arts groups, while programming for the public was often a secondary concern. This was no small thing. In a city where public arts funding hadn't existed at all only a few years prior, suddenly artists were empowered to create programming primarily for an audience of fellow artists, with resources and funds from municipal, state, and federal sources. In May 1977, the AAWC applied for a community arts project grant from the Georgia Council for the Arts. The project proposed by the AAWC was a workshop and lecture series that would run from November 1977 to March 1978, and it would bring established artists from across the Southeast to Atlanta to educate the Atlanta art community. The coalition referred to the workshop series as their service program for artists. Proposed workshops included an instruction session on how to photograph your own work, a vital skill for working artists who could not afford to hire a photographer, and proposed lecture series included a spotlight on Southeastern artists, an educational session that AAWC believed would help to, quote, break down the barriers of isolation which have existed between artists of the Southeast, unquote, and to educate the public to the tremendously talented artists who live in the Southeast. The Georgia Council for the Arts awarded the grant, contributing $1,000 to the AAWC workshop and lecture series. One of the most impactful ways the AAWC supported its members was by providing health insurance. The announcement, AAWC Insurance Plan, was included in the May 1978 Atlanta Art Workers Coalition newsletter by the coalition's vice president, Abby Drew. Drew explained that the policy was provided by the Equitable Insurance Society of the United States, and coverage included hospital stays, dental, and psychiatric services. In this way, the Atlanta Art Workers Coalition fulfilled one of its goals, serving members as an artist union that provided informational resources and direct care. The AAWC supported its art worker members by showing their work in the Coalition Gallery, conducting and distributing an informative survey of Atlanta art galleries, providing health insurance, and announcing available housing and studio space in the newsletter. By the spring of 1978, the newsletter had turned into the Atlanta Art Workers Coalition newspaper, printed in a tabloid-sized format, often consisting of several dozen pages, and it reached a circulation of approximately 15,000 people. In addition to providing useful information to individual Atlanta-based artists, the coalition also used its publication to support arts organizations. The newspaper regularly advertised exhibitions and programs sponsored or run by other arts organizations, like the Atlanta Women's Art Collective, Nexus, and Georgia Designer Craftsman. From its beginnings as the AAWC newsletter, and through its development into the Atlanta Art Workers Coalition newspaper, the coalition showed an unwavering dedication to keeping members aware of political actions pertaining to the economic interests of working artists and of scams or pitfalls that art workers needed to be cautious of. One such scam was the starving artists organizations that would buy cheap, mass-produced artworks and travel across the country selling them at a markup at pop-up art fairs by claiming the works were one-of-a-kind masterpieces. The AAWC informed readers of the scam and of actions to take if such an enterprise came to Atlanta. The AAWC also informed members of important political issues. For example, when a Fulton County commissioner, Hinson McAuliffe, went on a spree arresting performance artists on charges of pornography, the Atlanta Art Workers Coalition Board drafted a statement against censorship of Atlanta's budding arts community and sent it out to hundreds of individual art workers, arts organizations, politicians, government agencies, Fulton County judges, and national media. They also published information about the arrests, as well as the coalition's attempts to prevent more arrests, in the January-February 1978 issue of the AAWC newspaper. The Atlanta Art Workers Coalition created a network of artists and arts organizations and provided support to them by instituting a reliable communication channel, through which they shared important information and resources. The coalition board knew they were well positioned to assist Atlanta art workers because they were supported through publicly funded employment positions and grants. They were incredibly transparent about the CETA program, their relationship to it, and what the loss of it would mean for artists everywhere. A 1978 issue of the AAWC newspaper included a contribution by Pola Eisenstein, who worked for the City of Atlanta Bureau of Cultural Affairs. Eisenstein explained, quote, "The amount and quality of the people employed by CETA, both in the city and in the surrounding counties, continues to have a powerful impact on the survival of artists and the quality of art in the city," unquote. She explained that an end to the CETA program was in sight, and that whatever replaces it might offer artists more or less freedom, but that determination is contingent in part on how effectively art workers and arts organizations lobby their representatives for publicly funded jobs for artists. The benefit of CETA-funded jobs for artists would ultimately continue for a few more years before it was abruptly ended in 1981 under the Reagan administration. Fortunately, for the publication side of AAWC, a decision was made in late 1979 that would grow the newspaper into a subscription-based journal, ensuring its survival for the next 45 years. To expand coverage to regional concerns and to gain editorial autonomy, editors of the coalition's news publication proposed to the Atlanta Art Workers Coalition Board of Directors that the two entities should officially part ways. The coalition board voted in favor of the editor's request, and the nonprofit organization and publication Atlanta Art Papers was created. This is how Art Papers, an important Atlanta-based publication that has produced thoughtful regional coverage of artists, art news, and arts organizations for the past 45 years, came into existence. In 1981, Art Papers merged with Contemporary Art Southeast, the publication that the initial Atlanta Art Workers Coalition team came from. In this way, the Atlanta Art Workers Coalition has lived on through the publication Art Papers. Next year, in 2026, Art Papers is ceasing operations, marking its 50th anniversary. Back in 1981, the end of the CETA programs signaled the ultimate end of the coalition 1 year later.
For some reason, a lot of the things that we founded and started are still kind of hanging on. I mean, Art Papers is evidently these were real; they were meeting real needs in the community then, and still are doing it. So, in terms of knowing where these organizations came from and what their goals were in the beginning and how they have grown and changed and are helping artists now simply because they have a history and a reputation, I think that's very important.
The support for artists that existed in 1970s Atlanta was truly a unique phenomenon. It was an exciting time for art workers who were receiving support from their local government and eager engagement from their audiences and fellow artists. Atlanta art workers were motivated to take advantage of all that was available to them, and they created new organizations, publications, and exhibition spaces. As Julia Fenton said in the first issue of Contemporary Art Southeast, it was a time of loose talk, a time when art workers were engaging in new conversations and thinking up new possibilities about the artist's role in society. In this environment, and through the support and encouragement of their city, the board and staff of the AAWC encouraged members to stay engaged with politics and to see how the outcome of political decisions impacted art workers. The AAWC newspaper regularly published lists of bills and resolutions related to art and artists that were up for review in the House of Representatives and the Senate, both in the Georgia legislature and the federal government. The AAWC worked to instill an awareness in art workers of the tension between the economy and the labor of artists, and to take control by not only participating politically, but by stirring political action in other art workers. Additionally, the AAWC used the newspaper to share important information about available resources for artists and informative content, such as artist interviews and exhibition reviews. The Atlanta Art Workers Coalition used public funds to develop programming for an audience of artists. This is how they positioned the artist as a member of the public and not just a servant to it. This orientation values the art worker, their needs, and their role in society independently from what the artist can do for society. It recognizes the social agreement that art has cultural value, the fact that art is produced through the labor of art workers, and that supporting or not supporting art workers is a political choice, not just an economic one. The example of the Atlanta Art Workers Coalition shows that the political choice to publicly support artists had a positive impact for a brief moment of time in the heart of Atlanta. That's all for today. Tune in next week when we'll learn about the Atlanta Women's Art Collective and wrap up this little series. My research for this episode was conducted at the Museum of Contemporary Art of Georgia and at the Keenan Research Center at the Atlanta History Center. Other sources are in the show notes. Thank you to all the kind folks who work at these institutions, and thank you for listening.